Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
It's been a hard day's night.
In 3 weeks, the Titans are headed to London, and 104.5 The Zone is headed across the pond, so you don't miss a moment. Tune in all day Friday, October 19th, for complete coverage from London, including the Midday 180 live from the Titans Team Pub, presented by Crown Royal and VIP Wireless. Your home for Titans football. 104.5 The Zone.
It is the Midday 180 served up by Wendy's, and we can't wait to be a part of the Zone coverage in London. Just a couple of weeks away. This week, headed to week 5, Titans and Bills after the overtime victory against the Philadelphia Eagles. And we're pleased to be joined by Greg Cosell. Presented by the Huffaker Group of Keller Williams Realty. Make the right move by choosing Huffaker. Visit them online at THGTN.com or you can call 833-THG-NASH. Every week, we have the very best analyst on to break down the film. Greg's work and insights, they are exceptional. And we're fortunate to have him every Wednesday right here on 104.5 The Zone. Greg, true that you spent 6 hours breaking down Titans-Eagles?
Too much. Too much time, Jonathan. It kind of ruined my Monday. Well, ruined's not the right word, but it kind of, you know, I'm not only watching the Titans, as you guys probably know. I have, you know, other responsibilities as well. So it kind of got the best of me.
Let's start here. Let's start with the final play. Last Sunday, Corey Davis looked like the guy we saw in college.
Yep.
What can one game tell us about him?
I don't know if one game tells you any more about his skill set or his traits, but I think what you saw just before we get to that final play is you saw an offense that was much more aggressive right from the start, throwing the ball, use of play action, use of misdirection concepts, and because of that, Davis was much more of a factor in the offense. This was not a condensed offense looking to run the ball out of tight formations. So Davis is a high-level talent in terms of his size and his traits. He was the fifth pick in the draft, and that was on merit. He would have been a high pick by many teams. So now in an offense like this, which looked, there were plays in this game where I kind of said to myself, wow, that kind of looks like the Rams, and that's where Matt LaFleur came from. So he's likely to be more of a factor. Now, no one goes 9 for 161 every week, but he's clearly, talent-wise, their number one receiver.
We'll get back to that aggressive play calling in a moment. Let's start with the play call for the win, and let's look at it from the Philadelphia defensive perspective.
Yep.
Jim Schwartz went cover zero on that final touchdown that Davis caught. What did you think about the coverage? What did you think about sending six men at Mariota there and the play designed by LaFleur to get the look they wanted for Davis?
Well, that's what's interesting to me is I don't know if they knew they would get that look from Jim Schwartz. Jim Schwartz is a zero blitz guy, particularly in the red zone. He actually used it quite a bit throughout the game. But in the red zone, that's a tendency for Jim Schwartz. So that probably did not surprise the Titans. What was interesting watching the tape, it was what we call a 3-by-1 set. And the tight end was the single receiver to the boundary side, to the short side, and he was on the line of scrimmage. He was a line of scrimmage tight end, not split. So the Eagles going zero, meaning you're playing man-to-man on all 5 eligible receivers, they kept Jalen Mills, their left corner, on the side of the tight end, on the single receiver side. So what that did is it put Avante Maddox, who's a rookie and who actually played safety in this game, he's a rookie, he was matched up man-to-man with no help on Corey Davis, who was aligned in the inside slot on the 3-receiver side. So that's the matchup. If you're the Titans, you want that matchup. But I don't know if they expected that matchup, Jonathan, but that's the matchup they got.
Greg, we talked to Logan Ryan yesterday, and he talked about when you fall behind 17-3 in the second half, clearly you change your approach defensively, and you become more aggressive. What did you see? What was the change with that Titans defense and the level of aggression and how they played the Eagles once they fell behind 17-3?
Well, you know, I think you saw a little more man. You know, keep one thing in mind. This was a decision was made going into this game that they were going to play nickel with five defensive backs essentially on every snap of the game. And that's what they did. So they chose to do that even when the Eagles went with base personnel, meaning two tight ends, a couple of snaps with three tight ends. So they stayed nickel. So what that did for them is it allowed them to match up Logan Ryan, who's obviously a corner, but he's a big corner, physical type player, good body type. That allowed him to match Logan Ryan up to Zach Ertz, even when there were two tight ends on the field, because then they would use, they still had someone, you know, a safety, Byard, to play Dallas Goedert. So they were able to take a cover corner and put him on Zach Ertz. And I think that was effective for them.
Greg, how did they adjust to what Ertz was doing early in this game? Because, look, that's their primary target for Wentz. It's no secret they want to get the ball to him.
Sure.
But as the game progressed, I thought the Titans did a better job against him.
Well, part of it was the man. Part of it, you know, there were a couple of RPOs that were very effective, which are you know, just plays that theoretically break down the defense. Ertz caught a couple where he was wide open in the voids in zones, and that's not anybody's fault as far as a man-to-man coverage concept. So, and Ertz, by the way, does catch a lot of balls every week. So the fact, I think he ended up, did he have 10 this week? Something like that.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah, but I mean, he normally gets 7 or 8, and he's targeted a lot, and he's certainly in the two games that Wentz has been back, because the Eagles have still been lacking a bit of wide receiver. Obviously, they got Alshon Jeffrey back for this game, but Ertz has been their number one guy throughout the season. He was last year in terms of targets and receptions. So Ertz will get targeted a lot. So the mere fact that he catches a lot of balls, in and of itself, doesn't mean that he's going to beat you, because they throw him a lot of balls.
Greg Cosell with us on the Midday 180. Greg, this is a very X's and O's type question. Describe the three robber look that the Eagles gave the Titans and how LaFleur attacked it.
Well, that's what I call it. I mean, you know, maybe the Eagles call it something different. See, essentially, cover three, as most people know, it's a zone concept. And it means that three players are responsible for each of the deep thirds of the field, meaning that both corners have the deep outside third, and the single safety in the middle of the field has the middle third. Normally, that safety will play anywhere from maybe 15 to 20 yards from the line of scrimmage. What the Eagles do is they play what I call three robber, where they take that safety, that deep safety, and instead of playing 15 or 20 yards, he might be 10 or 12 yards from the line of scrimmage, and they ask their corners essentially to play a little deeper, because they can't really get beat over the top in the middle of the field, because that safety is not going to be deep enough. Well, one of the big plays was the Davis 51-yarder, and that came against this three robber coverage. And I think that what they did there, see, if you're going to play that coverage and you're going to have your corners play with what we call outside leverage, and Davis ran a great route. He ran a great route on Jalen Mills, but the safety was too low. He couldn't get over the top. So what has to happen there is the backside corner has to try to get over the top, but Ronald Darby didn't. So they were really able to beat that coverage on that 51-yarder, which was obviously a big play.
Greg, the matchup against the Buffalo Bills, the Bills have not been great, to say the least. But they did beat Minnesota. I'm still interested to get your take on how that happened. But let's start with the quarterback, with Josh Allen. What have you liked so far from what you've seen from the rookie?
Well, let's analyze Josh Allen. I think when he came out, there was a feeling that he was a guy with a very strong arm, but that the nuance and detail of playing the quarterback position was going to take time. So he speaks to the difference between arm strength and arm talent. He can throw the ball with velocity. He can throw the ball far, but he's not a touch thrower. He's not a pace thrower, and he struggles with accuracy. And one of the things that now has shown up in the NFL, more so than in college, because you don't see this much in college, is there's a lot more different front, defensive front, and disguised pressure looks in the NFL. And this is where Josh Allen, and by the way, the Titans are very good at this. And Josh Allen needs to develop a better understanding before the ball is snapped of where these pressure points are, where blitz could be coming from. He doesn't have a feel for fronts in relation to his protection. So what you see a lot of, and it's not, everyone is not his fault, but what you see a lot of are free rushers at Josh Allen. And the Titans, as you guys know, are very, very multiple with their front looks. And they do a lot with their pressure concepts. They bring linebackers, they bring defensive backs, and they bring them from different angles and different spots. And that's going to cause a problem for the Bills.
Have you noticed a theme in how Pease will bring the defensive backs on the blitz? We saw Logan Ryan a couple of weeks ago. We saw...
Yeah, what you're starting to see, Jonathan, and they're not the only team that does it, but it's actually a pretty interesting strategy, is when you get a closed formation, which is usually to the boundary,
yes,
the corner on that side is coming. That's what they do. And again, you don't do this every single time. You know, nobody does anything 100% of the time, but it's a tough deal to handle because, you know, if you're keeping your corners on sides and not flopping your corners, meaning to match up man to man, but keeping your corner on the closed side, you can bring him because the only receiver to that side is the tight end, and he's on the line of scrimmage next to the tackle. So the safety can handle him if he releases into a route. So you can bring that corner. They got a sack this week. I think they've got a couple throughout the year doing this.
Greg, I don't watch film the way a player or a coach would or anywhere close to the way you watch film. Do you see Jarrell Casey having a great start to season the same way I have?
Yep, he's... You know, it's funny you say that because I made a note watching the tape this week. Maybe it's one of the reasons it took me so long to watch it. But he kept showing up on film, making plays as a pass rusher, making plays in the run game. I mean, he's a very, very good player. I mean, he's been a good player. You guys know this. You're there. I've been watching the tape. I've been with you guys for quite a while and, you know, watching the tape for a long time. And Casey is just a really, really good player.
You know, we talked a lot about Harold Landry leading up to the season and your film study of him at Boston College.
Yep.
You know, he's been described as sort of a one-note guy, but that note has been pretty good when he's been in the game, and it was certainly paid off with a big play on Sunday.
But let me explain something, too. You can help that note, Chad, and then by that I mean you can help with your fronts. This is a team that uses a lot of stunts. So when you line up your front in a certain way with that defensive tackle lined up in between the offensive guard and the offensive tackle, and Landry split wide in what they call a wide nine, you guys may remember all that from when Jim Washburn was there, when they lined up in a wide nine, what happens is the offensive tackle has to be aware of a stunt. So he sort of starts his pass set with his eye toward the tackle inside, okay, because he's worried about the stunt. And all it takes is, boy, a tenth of a beat, and Landry, with his burst off the edge, can fly by the tackle, as he did Lane Johnson, one of the better right tackles in the league, on that sack-forced fumble. So you can help, even though he's still a one-note guy, Chad, as far as his skill set, you can help that skill set be effective by how you line up with your fronts.
Greg, how great was Mitchell Trubisky on Sunday?
You know, he was, look, he made all the throws, but the film showed the Bucs, there's not a lot of mystery to how the Bucs play defense, and they didn't play it very well. They're a team that rushes four. They play predominantly zone. Matt Nagy did an exceptional job with the design of his pass game concepts, his route concepts, to break down cover three and cover four. And quite honestly, Mike Smith and that defense did not come up with answers. Answers you have to have. And I'm just being honest, this is the NFL. Answers you have to have. The Bears and Nagy were not reinventing the wheel here with their pass game concepts. Trubisky, give him credit. He made the throws. The throws were there to be made. He made them, and it led to six touchdowns and an awful lot of yards.
Now, what we have been saying to begin the season with Ryan Fitzpatrick is, just wait, we're going to see the bad Fitzpatrick. Now, if you don't watch the game and you see what happened in that first half, maybe you just chalk it up to that. Was it simply that, or was it more than what we might think just bad quarterback play would look like?
No, I mean, I think we know what Ryan Fitzpatrick is, and there's not a surprise when that happens. You know, look, the guy came out of Harvard. He started over 120 games in the NFL. He's had an unbelievable NFL career given all that. But he's always been erratic as a passer. Well, the reality was, after two games, you could have made the argument easily that in those two games he threw the ball better than he ever has in his career. So, you know, why that happened, no one can answer, but for the most part, he's a guy who's been a little scattershot, does not have a big arm, at times struggled with what he was seeing. So, and when those things crop up again, I don't think anybody was saying, wow, I can't believe he's doing that. There is a track record, and that's what Ryan Fitzpatrick has been most of his career.
I know one of the things you do, Greg, each Monday is you go evaluate the quarterback play from across the league. What did you think of Mayfield in the overtime loss that the Browns had against Oakland?
I thought Mayfield played well. He was a little erratic and a little inconsistent, which didn't surprise me. But I think what continued to stand out is he has good vision. He has quick eyes. And that's tough to teach. You know, you can sit at a blackboard, which I guess makes me sound old because I guess everybody now is doing some kind of iPad to look at all this stuff. But you can always show a guy based on a route concept versus a coverage where you think the ball should go. But when you get in the game and it happens fast, you know, Mayfield has quick eyes. He sees it. So therefore, he has higher level, what I call elimination and isolation ability, eliminating what's not there and isolating what is there within the timing. Plus, he has very quick feet. He can make late in the down second reaction plays from the pocket. You know, he gets through progressions. He knows where people are.
Do you have a different feeling about Josh Rosen to this point?
Oh, Josh Rosen was very, very good this week.
Really?
Yes, he was very, very good. They, in fact, dropped what should have been two touchdowns on beautifully designed shot plays. I thought he was really efficient. You can see the refinement, the nuance to his game. He was very accurate. I thought he played very, very well.
See, that's a great example of just looking at a stat sheet, because I haven't watched that game, the Cardinals-Seahawks game. And just seeing 180 yards passing and a touchdown, and just assuming that Seattle did some things defensively to confuse him, and he wasn't very effective. It sounds like it was the opposite.
He wasn't confused at all. In fact, he threw a really well-designed shot play to Christian Kirk on a deep over route that would have been a touchdown for about 35, 40 yards. And then he also hit J.J. Nelson down the field. It should have been, if not a touchdown, a 50- or 60-yard gain. And, you know, just based on the stats, you'd be asking me different questions
right
about Josh Rosen. But he made some really big-time throws with precise ball placement. He was calm, poised. Like I said, there's a nuance to his game, but you saw that in college.
Greg, I did watch the game with the Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes against Denver. The highlight reel is going to be that flip play with the left hand.
Of course. And that's ridiculous. I mean, we all agree.
Right. Give me an example of what Andy Reid saw in Mahomes in the draft, because that was an Andy Reid pick. There's no doubt that they
right.
went, when they had Alex Smith, they went with Mahomes because Andy Reid fell in love with Patrick Mahomes. Give me the example of a play on that Monday night game that points to what Reid will flourish around with the skill set Mahomes has.
Well, he obviously likes him because Andy's a very good play designer, and a lot of his plays are intermediate and vertical in nature, so we know Patrick Mahomes can make those throws. But I think there's probably two plays that stand out. There was a Kelce 29-yard completion in the third and 11 in the third quarter, which they ran their basic flood concept, and it wasn't available, and Mahomes moved to his left, and that broke down the discipline of the defense, and then he had the vision to see Kelce on the backside away from his movement and was able to make a great throw across his body. That, you know, that you can't teach that. And then the 23-yarder to Robinson, the former Florida receiver on the final drive, was another example of Mahomes' second reaction ability, getting out of the pocket and throwing it down the field with accuracy. See, when he gets out of the pocket, he has very good vision, and obviously with his arm strength, he throws it down the field. He doesn't leave the pocket and throw checkdowns.
Greg, let's get some final thoughts on this Titans offense before we wrap up and as they go to Buffalo. For the first time, we saw the most complete version of this Titans offense with Matt LaFleur on Sunday.
Yep.
They're still not running it all that well, but they were throwing it on early downs. They were throwing it outside the numbers some with Mariota. They let him throw down the field for the first time this season since that injury. What did you like about Marcus's play? And what's the next part of the overall offensive development you're watching for?
I like the aggressiveness and I like the confidence. For instance, on that play early in the game where Mariota rolled left and he threw it to Davis in the deep over, and Davis actually just slowed down a touch, and it's why that ball wasn't complete. It really was not a bad throw by Mariota. I love the fact that they came right back with an out-and-up move with Davis, and he hit him for 25, 26 yards. I like the aggressive approach that we're not, if something doesn't work, we're not going to back off. So, you know, that's one thing I really liked. Then I just think you'll see more expansive route concepts that are part of this offense. You'll see more formations, more route concepts. They'll just keep building and building because there's so much. You know, it's an offense that, and we don't have time to get into this right now, maybe it's for next week, that's both simple and yet very detailed in together. You know, it's a combination of that.
And now they just need to find some tight end play without Delaney.
Yeah, that was not a good drop by Jonnu Smith on that first possession.
With you. Greg, thank you as always, and we'll recap Week 5 with you next week.
All right, guys, appreciate it. Thank you.
Yep. Greg Cosell, presented by the Huffaker Group of Keller Williams Realty. Make the right move by choosing Huffaker. Visit them online, thgtn.com, or call 833-THG-NASH.